It's the Troopany Show with your host, James Troopany.
Hello, and welcome to the Troopany Show. This evening, we'll be playing some jazz tunes.
I was going to say, it's a smooth jazz version.
I haven't done that in a while. I used to do it with Spindler, and it would weird him out. And then I did it too much, it stopped weirding him out, so I took a break. Now I'm bringing it back again.
I should be giving all of my opinions on the matches in the form of scat.
Yes. Today, I am joined by Mr. Simon Heath of this Shire. How are you doing, sir?
I'm very well, sir. Thank you for having me once again.
Indeed. So this is probably going to meander like it normally does because there's no one else holding us back. Alex isn't here to say, get to the point.
Yeah, they've all deserted us on this one, haven't they?
Yes, they're all slightly busy because it's Dominion Day. It's New Japan Pro Wrestling Dominion, which I've not seen. I'm assuming you haven't seen.
I've seen bits.
Oh, you've seen bits.
Yeah.
I've left the Total Wrestling Writers Podcast group under strict orders not to spoil anything after somebody said something interesting happened. I'm not having that.
Well, I had to just turn off Twitter completely.
Yes. No, I've not looked at it. Yeah, so we're flying blind on Dominion, but we have watched Best of Super Juniors, the final. We didn't get chance, in fact, none of us got chance to watch any of the Heat matches because it's
wrestling.
Just in the wrong time of year for us. G1 Climax, because obviously we work in the British wrestling industry, so we're all in education, means that we have plenty of time to watch the G1. Best of Super Juniors, not so much. But there's been interesting things, and we'll talk about the performances of people as we go through the card, because pretty much every entrant in the Best of Super Juniors was on this card. What did you think of the overall presentation, Simon?
I don't know. This tournament's been a bit of a weird one for me, because... Like, you were talking about the G1 earlier on, and I felt like with the G1, they put a lot of effort into pushing loads of guys.
You
know, most people came out of there with a story and a big push, and there were some guys like your Juice Robinsons, your Sonatas, and people like that who'd made that extra bit of an effort and got themselves really over in the context of the tournament, even though they didn't go on and win the thing, obviously. This one, I didn't feel like they did quite as well.
I could see that. I think part of that problem lies with the fact that when you've got three heavyweight championships, you can tell...
Two and a half.
Well, you can tell three stories, plus you've got like personal issue feuds, you've got contender feuds. There's six or seven stories you can tell in a three-belt division. In a one-belt division, there's only really two stories you can tell. And I can understand that you've also got some of those guys like Desperado and Kanemura and Sho and Yo, who are essentially just tag team wrestlers these days. So that kind of breaks down a little bit more of what you've got. So I can understand their limitations with this tournament, what they can do. It still doesn't quite... It still feels like the best junior heavyweight tournament you could put together on Earth.
Oh, yeah, don't get me wrong. All of my opinions are
relative.
Yes, exactly. Yes. It was still... All these shows were great, and there are some absolute... Basically, if you watch anything with Kushida or Desperado or Ospreay in it from the entire tournament, you're going to see 4+ star matches every single one.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it's strange you brought up the junior heavyweight tag teams because I felt like Sho and Desperado were the two guys that did actually come out of this tournament.
Yeah.
With a
lot
of momentum.
Yeah, definitely.
And I almost feel like they're not going to get a chance to move on it because they're stuck in that
tag feud with
exactly.
each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I can see exactly where you're coming from. It's kind of a bit of an anomaly, I suppose. I mean, me and Chelsea looked at that. The Super J Cup from 95.
Yeah.
And then there is a palpable difference in star names. But the trouble is we've got 20 years of hindsight saying, well, that guy runs New Japan Pro Wrestling. That's the most influential junior heavyweight that ever lived. That's the most successful junior heavyweight that ever lived. And we haven't got that foresight to see where these guys are going to be in 10 years' time.
No, but I think part of it is the fact that the junior heavyweight style has bled so much into the heavyweight wrestling now. Because, I mean, you will obviously get to it later on, but the main event of this show could have been the main event of any New Japan show. It would have sat up as a heavyweight matchup for a big title.
And even you look at the semi-final, Okada and Ospreay versus Owens and Ibushi.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Chase Owens is really a junior heavyweight. He's just a slightly bigger junior heavyweight. And Okada wrestles like a junior heavyweight.
Yeah, they don't have a dad bod division, do
no.
they?
So, you know, it's like, you know, that junior that's junior strong style is kind of like been awfully influential. I mean, it always has. You go back to Tatsumi Fujinami, who didn't wrestle any different to being a junior to being a heavyweight. He just put on 30 pounds. He had more tea.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's interesting to see the influence the New Japan Junior Division's had, but equally, like, the downfall of that is if you're influencing everybody else, you're kind of losing some of your shine.
It's almost like, I mean, they still have the guys who are died in the wool juniors, but it's almost like a feeding ground, like a sort of varsity league.
Yeah.
Junior varsity league to varsity kind of thing, isn't it? Because there's so many guys who just decide one day, I'm a heavyweight now and go up.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that, does that happen more than that than it used to, that?
I think it's happening more than it used to. I mean, you look at Beretta's and a good example. Tai Chi's another example.
The Young Bucks.
Young Bucks, you've just lost two there. But they were never going to be singles wrestlers. And no. They did one best of Super Juniors and said, please, can we never do this again? Because it's horrible. We don't like it.
Yeah.
Because they understand, like, you know, this actually just play. This is us reandering on a riff again. But it's the same thing. Like, you won't believe, all right, this is talking about tag team wrestling here a second. You wouldn't believe that two of the best friends in wrestling are Ricky Morton and New Jack, would you? They are really, really good friends. And when Mustafa Ali said he wanted to leave the gangsters, New Jack was talking to Ricky about it. And he said, me and Robert can't stand each other, but we know we're off the shit without each other. What the hell? Give him on the phone. I'll have a word with him. Because Mustafa believed he was his own draw and promptly went off into mediocrity, and New Jack became the big star.
Relatively speaking.
Slightly difficult to work with. Mm. But it's the same thing with the Bucks. The Bucks understand their value as a tag team, so it's the reason why they're not in the Best of Super Juniors tournament.
Yeah.
Or, indeed, will not be in the G1 either, because...
It's sort of unusual for a tag team of that stature to not really have... we always call it the Shawn Michaels and the Marty Jannetty, don't we? Tends to be in a big tag team, the guy who looks like the big star and the guy who's not probably going to go so far.
Yeah,
like your Edge and your Christians and you know.
But
I don't feel like there is that in the books.
I suppose Edge and Christian might be, because they're kind of both with the Shawn Michaels.
When they first split up,
it looked
Edge,
a lot like
Edge went
gonna,
off,
yeah.
And,
yeah,
know, took, but then Christian went off and did his own thing.
Figured out how to get there.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And the same happened with the Hardys as well. When the Hardys split, Jeff looked like the big star, but you know, you maybe wouldn't say that now.
No, so. Definitely not. And also, I mean, with Nick and Matt Jackson, they are such a symbiotic unit.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't look, a split between them two just wouldn't look right. So we will see what happens with them long term as they gun for the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Championships this morning, or 3 days ago as you listen to this, but next week when we podcast about it.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to this first match, because we haven't got anywhere yet. Chris Sabin and Flip Gordon defeat Shota Umino and Tiger Mask in 6 minutes and 32 seconds. This was all right. Chris Sabin had a good tournament. His first Best of Super Juniors in a long time, if he hasn't. It was his first one all together. Obviously representing Ring of Honor. Flip Gordon was... Flippy.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not on the Flip Gordon train. Apart from the fact he's really thick and really has some horrible opinions. A man who doesn't believe the government could be trusted, who works for the US Army.
Used to.
Used to work for the US Army. No longer works for the US
Army. Well, I'm assuming they looked at his Twitter.
Yeah, it's just like, Flip, I mean, I'm sure you're a nice guy and everyone. You seem to come across as a nice guy, but... No.
So what you're saying is you're not all in.
I am not all in on Flip Gordon at all. Seems but then again, fun. Neither is Flip Gordon.
No.
it was a perfectly fun match, as you expect, for 6 minutes and 32 seconds. Tiger Mask got a really best of Super Juniors, six points.
Yeah, Tiger Dad.
Tiger Dad, yes. Hasn't won it in 12 years, so kind of gearing up for the end of his career with this one. Maybe we'll get a Tiger Mask 5. No, we've got a Tiger Mask 5. We'll have to get Tiger Mask 6 next, I guess.
Yeah.
Tiger Mask 5 is actually a mixed martial arts fighter.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, he is. It's very true.
Yes. So what do you think of this one?
It's just one of those opening matches on these. I mean, the trouble is with this tournament is your final show is pretty much a one match card.
Yeah.
And then everything else is these patented New Japan. Here's a random tag match or a six-man that we've thrown together, but hopefully we'll push a feud that will be happening on the next show in the middle of this somewhere. But in the meantime, here's a match.
Yeah.
you know, so on the face of that, it was all right, but
yeah,
it's just one of them, wasn't it? There's not really much you can glean from it.
No, I mean, yeah, and I don't mean to rag on Flip Gordon too much. He does have some good moves, but like when we went back to the Ring of Honor tour and he was in that three-way, we were saying how sloppy he is, and
yeah,
he still hasn't improved.
He's been pushed too far too quick for me.
Yeah.
I 2 years down the line, but, you know, I think especially in a tournament setting like this where you've got, where they've brought in so many veterans as well.
Yeah.
You know, it does show him up a little bit when he's next to the likes of a Tiger Mask or a Chris Sabin or pretty much anybody else in the tournament, really.
Including guys who are younger than him. Yes. Anyway, we move on then to the second match, which was a six-man tag. Chaos, Tomohiro Ishii, Toru Yano, and Yoshihashi, the old guard of Chaos, defeat Suzuki-Gun, Minoru Suzuki, Taka Michinoku, and Takashi Iizuka in 10 minutes and 1 second. In what I have to say was actually a fairly thrilling match.
I love this match.
This match was awesome.
I looked at it on paper and just thought, oh, well, this is just going to be another one. But at least we'll have a bit of Toru Yano madness. And I know, as I was saying, these matches, they try and push towards a certain feud. And I know they're sort of, the Minoru Suzuki Tomohiro Ishii feud is the one that they're trying to move forward with this one. I want to see Suzuki Yano. That's what I want to see, because you had a little bit of interaction there, and they said on commentary, like, oh, Yano, he's always been tormenting Suzuki, and I would love that feud, just Yano getting one over on him over and over again until he absolutely loses it.
You haven't been watching New Japan that long, have you?
No, well, not religiously, anyway.
About, they had a feud.
Oh, no.
Which was blown off last year, and that was essentially it. It was 4 years of Yano just getting past Suzuki, and Suzuki just, in a Wile E. Coyote fashion, just blowing his mind every time. And the big payoff last year was the death match they had at G1 Climax Final, because Yano beat Suzuki in the G1. Sorry?
How did I miss that?
Yeah, but you're right. It was fantastic. Yeah. It was awesome. It actually went like 15 minutes. Suzuki dragged a great match out of him.
See, this is the beauty of my New Japan watching, is whenever I say, oh, this is what I really want to see, somebody always says, well, if you go back 4 years,
yeah, so
it's already
New
happened.
New Japan World, 999 yen a month. Well worth the investment.
999.
But yeah, Ishii versus Suzuki. What a brilliant idea. Why hasn't anyone thought of this before? Why can't we watch that every week?
Yes.
Yes. Grumpy old man versus grumpy, slightly old man hitting each other really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be amazing. And over the Rev Pro British title, I'm assuming, as well.
Mm.
So, UK tour coming up.
Oh, yeah.
Ah.
Yeah, that's...
Strong Style Evolved, yeah, I'm wondering.
In
what's the main event
of 3 weeks' time, isn't it?
Milton Keynes going to be.
They've not announced any matches, as far as I'm aware. They haven't even announced all the participants yet.
So I would think that the Repo Championship might be an undercard title match.
Yeah, possibly. They're pretending it's not a Rev Pro show.
Yes.
Like they're going to pains. Big Andy Big Andy Q, the owner of the Dream Factory, is going to great pains to say this is not a Rev Pro show, this is a New Japan show. But all of the wrestlers on the show are being announced from the Rev Pro Twitter.
Of course they are.
So, you know.
Much in the same way as the Strong Style of All shows in LA were not Ring of Honor shows or CMLL shows, but there was loads of CMLL and Ring of Honor talent, because CMLL is actually the closer company, and you'd be insane not to use them.
And there's a big chunk of the New Japan roster who were in Daytona Beach that weekend.
Yeah.
So, we are getting quite a lot of the big stars that we perhaps haven't seen before. Okada obviously being the big one.
Hmm.
But yeah, it is very much a sort of...
There's nothing wrong with that.
It's the house show circuit.
Yeah, it's what
you
have
great,
to do.
Which is great.
And the thing is, with New Japan, everything gets broadcast anyway. So
yeah, that's very
more
true.
Or less now. There are a couple of house shows that don't get broadcast in really, really tiny, tiny shows.
Which is why you get these thrown together tag matches and six-mans. Yeah. You know, they're the matches that wouldn't be televised otherwise.
Yeah. So. And there's like, I'd rather have this than a 20-minute promo that goes nowhere.
Yeah, well, I mean, we wouldn't be able to understand it anyway, would we, sir?
No, but, well, I don't know. I can understand Minoru Suzuki because he frightens the shit out of me. Anyway, but that was really, really good, and you should watch it. Hey, Uncle Dave gave it 3.25 stars.
Did he?
Three and a quarter stars. He also gave this 3.25 stars as well. Marty Skrull and Yujiro Takahashi defeat Hiroshi Tanahashi and Toei Henare. 13 minutes and 17 seconds in a bit of a rip snarter. It was all right, this. I liked it. It was good. Marty being a dick.
Yeah.
Because that's what he does.
Yeah, I'm sort of... I don't know whether it's just because I've seen him for years and years and years around the British circuit, but I'm sort of getting a bit sick of Marty's shtick.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm made up for him that he's having this huge success, and he's massively over in Ring of Honor and in New Japan. But yeah, it's all getting a bit. Seen it.
This is the thing, though, is like essentially he's done the territory stuff. Like his first territory was as Party Marty, and he got took that as far as he could, which was, well, to be honest, the ringside barrier at Wembley Arena, to be honest. That was as far as he could take that. And then when he comes back and he's reinvented himself, he's done NGW, and then he goes to Progress, and then he goes to Rev Pro, and he builds the character up. He's done all those territories. His next territory is New Japan. So he does have to, like, you know, it's only the same thing. Like, the sheep herders used to do.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
But the difference is now that everybody's seen everything because it's all available.
Yeah, that is the trouble.
Totally. But I just, like, I suppose he's sort of cursed that he will always be compared to Ospreay.
Yes.
Just because they've come up through the system at the same time, essentially. Yeah. And I feel like Ospreay, and he's obviously younger than Marty.
Yeah, yeah.
But just in the limited period of the villain.
Yeah,
I feel like over that time, Ospreay has developed much more as a worker in his time in Japan than Marty has.
Yes.
I don't feel like Marty's that much better than he was when he left in the first place.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, that's still good.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But I feel like when Ospreay left, it was like, oh yeah, Ospreay's good. And now you watch Ospreay work and you think, holy...
I suppose if you look at someone that doesn't really... I was going to say, like, if you look at a control person, Zack Knight, who doesn't really wrestle outside of the UK, who came up in the same system. In fact, he used to tag team with Marty back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a good example of someone who hasn't... Zack's got a lot better over the years, and he's still a very entertaining wrestler to watch, but he's never really needed to wrestle outside of the UK because he earns a living doing what he's doing because he's very good at what he does. But again, you know, his character hasn't really developed in the same way Marty Scurll's hasn't.
No, I think his character has. That's the thing. I'm not sure his work has at the same rate. That's what I'm saying. Whereas I feel like Ospreay and Sabre Jr. as well at the same time, their whole package has developed while they've been out in Japan. Their character work has got better. Their selling's got better. The move sets got more diverse.
Ospreay's selling has improved infinite amount.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I just sort of feel like Marty's kind of stagnated a little bit.
Possibly. Also, I think when you rely on sing-along spots, once you've got them over, you don't need to try as hard, which is not necessarily a bad thing.
No, no, absolutely not.
But it also means that you have a tendency to be very repetitive, a la The Rock 1999, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, it worked out fairly well for him.
It did. So, but bad example. But, you know, people do want to see you do your regular stuff.
Oh, yeah, don't get me wrong.
From a work rate point of view, which is really what a lot of us on the podcast watch these matches for, it's
the opposite of going to see a band.
Yeah,
because you go and see a band and you want them to play the greatest hits, don't you?
Yeah.
Like, you go, no, I don't want to hear your new stuff. I'm not interested in whatever new album you just brought out. Just play me the thing that was number one 20 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there are plenty of wrestling shows like that if you want to go see them as well. It's not what we expect from New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Well, I don't know, it's not what we expect, it's just it's not my personal preference.
Yeah. Yujiro with a new girl, by the way, just thought I'd mention that.
I'd rather we didn't.
Yeah, well, Peter's.
I just feel like I could defend New Japan's attitude towards women better if they didn't have any women at all on the show.
Yes. I mean, I can understand what you mean. I wouldn't mind if it was just Peter every time because she obviously has an established character and she adds value to Yujiro.
Yes.
And she's, as Chelsea's put it many more times, she's far more interesting than Yujiro is.
It's not difficult, but yes.
So true. It's like, but when they swap and change the girls apart, it kind of makes them a more meaningless.
Throw away. Yeah, yes. It's just like, look at this person's bum. And that's...
Presumably because Peter wasn't available this weekend and it's a smaller show, we'll just get a girl. Because Peter would be earning more money.
But I mean, that's the issue entirely. The fact that you can chop and change them like that suggests that they're not an integral part.
Yeah.
Their actual individual personalities. So I just wish they if you're going to do no women, just don't have women at all on your show.
Yeah.
And then I could just say, look, they don't have women.
And if you want to go see women, go watch Stardom or Sendai Girls.
It's bloody amazing. Go and watch this stuff. It's great. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But when you've got one or two women and they are entirely used...
subservient roles.
Yes, exactly. Then it just makes it that bit harder to defend New Japan. Yeah. And I do like defending New Japan.
Which is fair enough. Anyway, this match was pretty good. Toa Henare showing a bit more depth. He is developing quite quickly as well, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. I really liked his stuff in this match. He's getting more towards the sort of powerhouse that he should be, like hitting those big moves and So yeah, I really liked his work.
Yeah, and just Hiroshi recently. Tanahashi did a stretch job.
Yeah.
In the end, this was really obviously Toa Henry took the pin, but Marty Scurll beat up Hiroshi Tanahashi, and to come and make the save was Jushin Thunder Liger.
Yep, in his casual beige polo.
Yes, and I'm intrigued to see what happened, because the first time I saw Jushin Thunder Liger was in a feud with a mustachioed evil bastard of a heel from Britain called Mark Rollerball Rocco.
Yeah.
For 30 odd years ago, and it was the best feud on TV at the time, and they were outstanding together. So I got a feeling this could be the same.
I mean, I seem to remember a while ago on this podcast, I suggested that Zack Sabre would have made a great black tiger to Kota Ibushi's Tiger Mask W. But Marty Scurll wouldn't be a bad shout either in that role. I mean, I know we're talking Liger and not Tiger Mask, but you know, you go back to Rollerball Rocco. So.
Yeah, Rollerball Rocco was indeed the first black tiger, which was dead handy for his career in Britain, because from time to time he'd get kicked off British TV, and then Max Crabtree would have to send him to New Japan for a bit.
Yeah.
Here, go play in front of massive crowds and earn thousands of pounds and then come back. Anywho, next match was Los Ignorables de Japón, Bushi, Evil, Sanada, Tetsuya Naito, defeating ACH, Dragon Lee, Kushida, and Raisuke Taguchi in 18 minutes? Eight? Did this last 18 minutes cage match?
Didn't feel really like it did.
No, it lasted about three. This started off with ACH dancing and getting down to his bad self.
He certainly
to
did.
To Naito's theme tune. Naito was impressed.
He was
and then kicked
it.
Him in the arm.
Yeah. But I mean, that's how Naito says hello, isn't it?
It's how he shows his love.
Yeah, exactly. So yes. It's totally fine.
But yeah, I just love watching LIJ do tag wrestling.
Yeah.
That should be an entire show. It should be 4 hours of LIJ just tagging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a weird one. I was listening to a podcast a couple of days ago where they were discussing who the sort of least appropriate faction member in the world of wrestling was. So like the one guy who just didn't fit in with a particular faction. And they came up with Evil. That was their final choice. They decided that Evil was the one that in the whole of wrestling didn't fit in with a specific faction, which I kind of see, and I know I get that out of all of LIJ, he's the one I would pick that doesn't fit in, especially with. But considering you've got, you know, members of Chaos and members of Bullet Club and members of whoever else that just don't fit. I mean Taichi, for Christ's sake, what is he doing?
Taichi doesn't fit anywhere.
No, exactly. So, you know, I just thought that was a bit weird. But even if the character itself is a bit off when it comes to the group itself, when they work together in these tag matches, it's always great. I do feel a little bit sad for Bushi being the only member without a title.
No,
that's quite upsetting.
Give it time.
I mean, I know Naito doesn't actually bother bringing his with him. He does have it, you know.
Give it time. That New Japan Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championship's got to go somewhere eventually.
That is true.
We actually missed a match out, so we'll go back a bit. And this was actually got 3¼ stars from Belzer as well, so we should probably talk about it. Because you just reminded me of Tai Chi, and I was like, I'm sure I saw Tai Chi wrestle on this card somewhere. Chaos, Hiroki Goto, Sho and Yo defeated Suzuki-Gun, El Desperado, Tai Chi and Yoshinobu Kanemura in 11 minutes and 44 seconds in, again, a thoroughly entertaining match. And tell you I was impressed with Yo. Everyone goes on and on about Sho, but I like Yo a lot.
True
enough.
He's
got a lot of really good facial expressions, sells a lot better than Sho does as well, and is a bit of a technical marvel. I think he's going to be really, really good. I think he's got more potential in the long term, because he's going to be one of those guys that's going to be overshadowed, so he's going to learn a lot.
Yeah, yeah. I think you've got the three guys who really use this tournament to their advantage in this match. Roppongi 3K, both of them, I think, came out of this tournament looking great.
Yeah.
And Desperado has been an absolute revelation in this tournament, I reckon. He's been amazing.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this tag match is more about the feud for the never open weight title.
Yes, it was.
Which this match coming up.
Oh, God. I mean, Tai Chi, I mean, Elgin, and Goto.
You could not have. It's like they picked a match specifically for me to not give a damn about.
I mean, I like Goto. But I can't put up with 15 minutes of a. I don't like triple threats anyway.
No.
And
for a title that means nothing. quite frankly.
It meant more when it was on other people.
Yeah, well, No, I mean, right now, I don't, as of this moment.
They should be doing
nothing.
Something to improve Goto's lots, and they're not. They're just trying to book around corners to keep Elgin involved, who they should have fired long ago, and, well, just not renewed his contract. And Tai Chi, who's like, he's all right.
The ultimate wheel spinner.
Yeah, he's just there, you know. There was some groundswell opinion this week that Tai Chi is actually some good. I'm not completely convinced yet.
I've seen nothing.
No, he's not. I mean, yeah, I like the character, but I just don't get interested in matches that are just...
He's not even the best singer in his faction. I mean, you know, whole gimmicks about singing, and Minoru Suzuki's a better singer with a better theme music.
Are you a Zack Sabre Jr. on karaoke or something?
Judging by his speaking voice, I'm going to imagine that his singing voice is not exactly spectacular. But
yeah.
Prove me wrong, Zach. You're great at everything else. So,
indeed. This six-man was actually very, very good. Kind of sets up this triple threat that's going to happen at the Dominion card, which none of us seem to
care
be interested in.
No, but it also sets up the feud for the junior heavyweight tag team
championships
as well. So.
Yeah, which is going to be cool. And also, obviously, in the long run, Hirooki Goto will have better things to do because this is the bottom of the barrel.
For him, yes.
Yes, for him. Yeah. I would tell you what, for challenges for him, who I'd actually really like to see, I think Beretta would be really cool. But actually, he's in Chaos, we can't. So it'd have to be, my other option would be Chase Owens.
Or Juice.
Juice would be good. Yeah. Or Tama Tonga.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, yeah. Or that would be really cool.
I mean, it's not like he's, like, I don't really care for him particularly. But it's not like he's terrible or anything. And there are many, many people on the card that he could have a fantastic feud with.
Yeah, and has done in the past.
It's just Elgin and Taichi are not those people. So.
Lumpy and no personality. And
yep.
Yeah. Anyway, but yes, so Hirooki, we're sorry.
Yeah.
Yes. then we move on to, well, we've done that one, we've done that one. So we move on to the semi-final match. We're getting through this quick. What time is it?
I don't know.
Well, we've been at this for 25 minutes. Well, good lord, we've got 15 minutes on these last two matches.
Well, we'll ramble about nonsense at the end. Be fine.
Actually, by far the best match on the card, I think, other than the main event, which we'll get to in a minute, was Chaos's Kazuchika Okada and Will Ospreay. Now I've given this tag team a name.
Go on.
The Golden Crown.
Mm.
See what I did there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Kota Ibushi and Chase Owens. See, Kota Ibushi, Golden. Chase Owens, Crown. Because he's the crown jewel of Bullet Club. Golden Crown.
So, Kazuchika Okada and Will Ospreay would be, what, the Swords of Rain? Oh, no, he's already used Rainham, hasn't he?
Rainham Essex
Maker.
Money.
Because he's already used Rainham Maker, so yes. I can't use that.
Essex Money, I guess.
Essex Money, like beer money.
Yeah.
But Essex.
Essex Money.
It's like the exact opposite of new money.
Yeah.
just no money.
No, you sit around driving in Cortinas listening to Dr. Feelgood. That's what you do.
Oh, that's, and it's you normal people would think that you had money, but because you spend it all on train season tickets into London, you actually have no money.
Yes, so that's right, the reason why you drive a 1977 Cortina. Not done up.
No.
Just... last MOT'd in 1983 with
Will and Bay
yeah.
on the windscreen.
VAT in the post in the corner.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, this was great.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good match, this.
I'll tell you. Well, yeah, by the way, if you like our Flights of Fantasy, last night, and I'm trying to remember who it was, hang on a second. Last night, Chelsea set a tweet out which was, this is the year that pro wrestling got more bisexual than ever. And where is it? I'm trying to find it now. Somewhere in here. Me and Emma from Pro Wrestling Torch then went on a flight of fancy and wrote an entire bisexual love story about wrestling. How she left her husband and took the kids and rebuilt a relationship with her high school girlfriend. And we did it all in a Twitter thread, starting with, this is the year wrestling. So you can find that, because, like, you know, we haven't known each other long. I think she followed me and we started talking, and this is what we had. Our first interaction was a bisexual love story. That's how it
as
works.
As so many of us that have made friends in similar ways.
You should follow her. She's pretty cool. Hang on, I'll just get you a Twitter handle. It is. Whoops.
The only erasure you'll ever get on this podcast is the band.
True, very true. She's Forked PGH, and she does the talking on a podcast on PW Touch, and she's pretty cool. So follow her. PW Touch, nice website.
.com.
Yes, where was we? So we were talking about this match with Will Ospreay.
There's some wrestling happening somewhere
against Golden Crown, as I called them.
Yes. It sounds like a shade of paint.
So I think Money versus Golden Crown. Yeah. This was very good. This was exceptionally good, in fact. And told the story of, obviously, Kota Ibushi, Kenny Omega's best friend / boyfriend, going up against Kazuchika Okada. Had some incredible spots in it. The tag team work between Chase Owens and Kota Ibushi, I'm going to say sacrilege here and say it might actually be better than Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi.
God, you are lucky I'm the only person on this podcast right now, because my
word. They're crisper. They work together better. I'm just saying. I'm not like, no, the emotional pull of the Golden Lovers is, yes, that gets me into the story. And Chase ain't going to be doing moonsaults off middle turnbuckles, I'll tell you that now. However, together in the ring, basic 9-to-5 tag wrestling, rock and roll express, as you'd expect Chase Owens to be, they are nuts and bolts as good as any tag team I've seen in the last 10 years.
See, I can see the look on your face now. You're booking a love triangle storyline in your head now, aren't you?
As Chelsea said, he is the golden side chick. And no knock on Okada, obviously, so I'm not going to say that. But and Will Ospreay were fantastic in this match. They were really, really good. And I just loved it. I could watch these four wrestle all day.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't hurt that it's my four favourite wrestlers, I think, in New Japan Pro Wrestling, wrestling each other. Because I love Ibushi, and I love Chase Owens and Okada. And like everyone was going mad for, I want Will Ospreay versus Kota Ibushi. Now, I want Chase Owens versus Kazuchika Okada.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
In a singles match, I think that would be awesome. Mr. Gedo, can we have that, please?
Yeah, why the hell not? This match was great. Just that one particular spot where Ibushi and Ospreay both did overhead Pele kicks and sort of landed face-to-face in the middle of the ring, both prone, staring at each other.
Yeah.
I thought it was very, 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 very good.
Yes.
And that's testament to how Ospreay's sort of timing and almost ring generalship has improved so much while he's been in Japan. I want to see Ospreay Ibushi.
Oh, yeah, I'm not saying I don't. I'm just saying I'd prefer to see Okada versus Chase Owens.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I mean, I know Ospreay has got a long list of people he's got to face over.
Between now and Wrestle Kingdom. Well, assuming he keeps the title.
And beyond, but that has to be a feud at some point, surely.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Like the thing that always amazes me about New Japan is they've got so many threads, even just attached to one individual wrestler. They've got so many threads going at any one time.
Yeah.
And I sometimes complain about storylines getting forgotten about, but then 6 months later,
they get paid off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they'll come back to it and go, "Hey, remember when?" They were talking about it with Liger and Skrull. Saying that, oh, well, you know, Liger's got enough on his plate at the minute, but he's not going to forget what Skrull's done to him.
Yeah.
And you know that he's going to go off and do feuds with whoever else, and then 6 months down the line, he's going to come out and batter the hell out of Skrull. And the commentators are going to go, oh, yeah, you remember when he ripped his mask? Yeah. Well, have that, Marty.
Yeah.
this is the same thing. They're always just, and I'm assuming this is Gedo, always just putting little nods to certain feuds in matches, and they might not use it straight away, but they've got it to come back to later on, and they very, very rarely forget about it. And that is a lost art, because many storylines get just completely forgotten about, and then when they do come around to them, nothing makes any logical sense as to how they got to that point. New Japan are almost the complete antithesis of that.
Yeah, it's an old Jerry Jarrett, Bill Watts kind of trick of like, actually, New Japan Pro Wrestling probably works more like a Bill Watts-style promotion than any other, because Bill Watts used to book along the lines of episodic television.
Yeah.
And you group wrestlers together. They weren't sent off in factions like they are in New Japan, but they had five wrestlers associate together. And then you've got one group at one level, two groups at one level of the card, two groups at another level of the card, two groups in the main event. and you have all the possible combinations of these four or five wrestlers going against each other in tags, in six mans, and then you work through that one group, and then you do the same, and then one group moves up, one group moves down, one moves to the main event, and that's how you make episodic television work. And this is what New Japan does better than anyone else has done since Bill Watts did. You've got this control. Everything's moving forward. You've always got something to go to the next thing with.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Okada versus Omega is a prime example. I know we haven't seen it yet, but, you know, they never... Don't tell me anything. They never run out of stuff to do. You know, a lot of Jim Cornette have said that, well, obviously, after that great match they've had, they've got nothing else to do. And it's like, no, they can go for an hour draw. Yeah. Well, they've definitely got nothing else to do now. No, they can have an half-hour shotgun match in a tournament,
and
they can tell that story, go further, and then they can have another one.
Yeah, and it's still full of emotion, and everybody's on the edge of their seats.
Yeah,
and,
you know,
babies are being thrown in the air.
Women are inseminated on the spot by magic. And
everybody, really.
Yes. Like,
just blowing the rules of biology out of the water completely.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, so that was that match, and it was very, very, very good.
Yes, and hopefully we'll see more of whatever combination of these four guys.
Chase and Kota and Will. Well, we've already seen Will and Rainmaker, haven't we? So
yeah.
So, yeah, Chase and Kota together. More tagging of them too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'd like them to tag a bit more. Because Kenny might be slightly busy. I don't know.
No.
But no one's going to tell me, so it's all good. All right, we get to the main event of the evening, which is the Best of Super Juniors, number 25 final. Hiromu Takahashi defeats Taiji Ishimori, Bone Soldier 2, in 34 minutes and 1 second. In an absolutely astounding match. I've seen a lot of matches at Currican Hall. A lot of matches at Currican Hall. And very few of them live up to this. In fact, the match it reminds me most of was the first Miko Satomura Io Shirai match, because they stole a bunch of spots from it.
and that is the highest praise that James can give.
It is.
Right there.
Yeah,
without saying the word Toyota.
Yes. Yeah, but that shotgun dropkick along the
John
walkway.
Woo.
The John Woo. Actually, Io did that to Miko. That was the first person I saw doing that along that particular walkway.
Well, that's Hiromu's done that previously in this tournament. So
yeah.
It's becoming one of his things.
Yeah.
The John Wooingest John Woo that ever wooed.
But yeah, it was an outstanding athletic performance from both of them, let's be honest. They did things in this match I don't think either of them were capable of. I haven't seen a lot of Ishimori in New Japan because I haven't watched the tournament. But the stuff I've seen him do in Impact Wrestling, and let's be honest, Impact Wrestling is intentionally a short format wrestling show. Hmm. Matches are not going to be longer than 8 minutes because it's made for TV, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's the product they make. But it doesn't really give someone a chance to stretch their legs. And when I've seen him on pay-per-view, it's usually been in three ways or in multi-man matches where he hasn't been able to show off his stuff because it's just like, you've got four spots here and you've got three spots here and go. Whereas this was him able to tell an interesting and emotional storyline. Those years in Noah, because he's a King's Road style wrestler, though he started off in Toryman with Ultimo Dragon. It's interesting to me, like, now that I'm breaking off again here, but now that wrestlers don't stay in one company all the time, you're getting to see much more cross-pollination in styles, and it's very telling how these different styles are being evolved in pro wrestling. Ishimori technically is a King's Road style wrestler because he worked for Noah. So it's very much about that layering up of moves and building things together, which in a situation like this helps no end because you're trying to get one over on an opponent who's so scattershot. So Ishimori comes across looking as a logical thinker compared to Takahashi-ness, which is random.
Yeah.
But good random.
Yeah.
What did you think of this, Sonny?
Oh, this was amazing. Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of... the thing that I'm most glad about is that they're not really referring to him as the Bone Soldier. It was just like, they just brought him, like, a couple of weeks ago, they brought him out under the mask, took the mask off, was like, hey, it's Ishimori! And now he's just Ishimori, which is much better because it's sort of a tarnished brand, isn't it? I mean, it's not exactly Tiger Mask, is it?
No.
I mean, Tiger Mask isn't even Tiger Mask anymore, really, like, but it's, you know... Yeah, so I'm glad they're letting him sort of stand alone. And I, again, I know I harp on about this, but In any other company, this would have been booked as an LIJ Bullet Club clusterfuck.
Yes, it would.
There'd have been run-ins, or there'd have been shenanigans on the outside, or anything like that, and it probably would have been a screwy finish, or they would have set up some sort of six-man feud down the road. But no. You send two guys out at the top of the game, give them 34 minutes, tell a story, and we get an absolutely amazing match, and the crowd were so into it. Like,
I mean,
that Hurricane crowd is always on form, generally speaking, but my God, by the end of this, they were... Kevin Kelly was saying that they're not on their feet because you're not allowed to stand up, but they nearly are. I was like, yeah, good. Can we have this in British wrestling now, where if you bought a seat, you'd stay in the damn seat so that people behind you can actually see what's going on? That'd be nice. But yeah, this was great. The pacing was perfect. You had... The outside brawling, the crazy spots out there with the guardrail and what have you. You had the trading of quote unquote strong style punches in the center of the ring, the fighting spirit sort of side of it, and then you had the crazy flippy spots as well. There was one slip up, I think, throughout this entire match. There was a reverse Rana by Hiromu that went a little bit awry.
I think that's probably due to the brevity and height of Ishimori, to be fair.
Yes, but in the context of the match and the characters in the match, that worked really well because Ishimori did one just before that, which was perfect and, you know, pinpoint accurate and technically beautiful. And then Hiromu just kind of flings himself in a direction and stuff happens.
Yeah.
Which works, because that's the dynamic of those two wrestlers. And I obviously this is leading to a title match against Ospreay, but I sort of hope we get a bit more out of these two.
What's your take on, because I mean the relationship between Will and Takahashi is pretty
fraught.
Well, they seem to get on really well.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird one, isn't it? Because they played it for jokes to start off with. But I think the idea we were supposed to take away from it was that Ospreay was getting more and more annoyed at Hiromu as it went on. And when he came out, and at the end of this match, like, Ospreay obviously came out to do his "I'm going to hold the belt up and you're going to hold the trophy up" thing, and we're going to stare at each other for a bit.
Yeah.
He cut a mind-bogglingly dull promo. I mean...
I'm very proud of you.
Yes. Yeah. I've got this belt and I am keeping this belt, thanks, bye. you are better than that, Will.
Yes,
like, you can cut a promo.
I don't realise you're going slow for the Japanese audience, but they were falling asleep.
Yeah. But having said that, the bit at the end where he was walking away and then Hiromu meowed at him and he just turned around and went, "Mother..." I just thought that sort of set it up quite nicely. But yeah, it is quite a strange one, because they did sort of play that feud for laughs, didn't they?
Yeah.
Predominantly. And now you've kind of got to make it serious. But they will be able to do it. You know, obviously that match is going to be great.
Yeah, I think it will. I mean, the junior heavyweight, it's one of those things. I mean, we were saying earlier there isn't a lot of threads going on in the junior heavyweight division. Mm. Having said that, the strength and depth they've got is phenomenal.
Well, I mean, this is the problem, isn't it? You've got so many guys who are deserving of top-line storylines.
But there's only so many stories you can tell in a one championship division. To an extent, if it was Impact Wrestling, it wouldn't be so much of a problem, because first of all, you just make them all heavyweights anyway.
Yeah.
And secondly, because Impact relies so much more on personal issue storytelling that New Japan can't really do that often, just because it's supposed to be a sport and it's about winning belts and winning matches.
Yeah, and their structure of the way their events are televised isn't set up for
like
that, really,
for instance,
anyway. So.
That Sami Callihan, Eddie Edwards feud in Impact could not exist in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yay!
That'd be lovely, wouldn't it? Boring me to tears. I was so glad last week. I was on the Total Wrestling podcast, Writers podcast last week, and I was so glad Mike didn't ask me about Sami Callihan, because it would have just been blistering.
How long have we got?
It was 2.5 hours anyway, and it had at least been three. So you couldn't run that feud or any feud like that in New Japan Pro Wrestling, because it just won't work. So that kind of limits your options in the storytelling you've got, because every match then, but equally every match matters, so it doesn't matter so much, because every time you have a singles match between two people, it's for something important, because it's to get you closer to the championship.
Yeah.
And even tag matches are important, because if you get a pin over that person, it moves you closer to that championship.
I almost feel like you could kill two birds with one stone by getting back to the original point of the open weight title.
Mm,
if you put some of those junior guys into that title, into that title picture for the never open weight title, which was the whole point of it, was that it doesn't matter if you're a heavyweight or a junior, you can go for this title.
Yeah.
Then Goto gets some decent feuds, and some of these guys who are maybe a bit lost in the junior.
Goto versus Kushida would be astounding.
Yeah, absolutely.
Goto versus even Ishimori, really.
Basically anybody in that junior. Yeah. Like, it would be. I mean, I'm not talking about a long, drawn-out feud.
No, one match. You know, yeah.
Well, maybe two or three, but you know, you could definitely get something out of that.
Yeah, and so maybe that's where they need to look. But yeah, overall, Takahashi and Ishimori did an outstanding job, and just exactly what you expect. And you've also got to bear in mind, the standard for this final match is ridiculously high.
Yes.
You know, I mean, Kushida and Ospreay last year got crazy, as Kushida suggested they should.
Yeah.
And they really pushed the boundaries of what junior heavyweight wrestling was about. And it has such a legacy. We were talking about that 95 Super J Cup. Well, that was an incredible tournament, and that's what they've got to live up to.
Yeah.
You know, this has got to be Liger versus Gedo time and time again, or Liger versus Ultimo Dragon, or Liger versus Samurai, or Ultimo Dragon versus Grand Nuiwa. It's got to be that level of wrestling for a month.
yeah, that's the thing. It's keeping that. We said this when we covered the G1, just the insane pace and relentless. I know they don't wrestle as much as the guys in the WWE do, but
they don't. But the matches are harder and they're longer.
Well, there's more matches that mean something.
Yeah, that's it.
That's the thing, especially if you've got a big money feud going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to say. I mean, like, from a health point of view, we have this. Me and Chelsea have this discussion a fair bit as well. Is it healthier to wrestle 5 days a week on an easier schedule where you're wrestling house show matches? But that's still bodily wear and tear, or wrestle 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, give yourself a chance to recover, but you're wrestling in much more emotionally charged matches, which are much more physically violent.
I would like to think that if, for example, an Ospreay had a WWE contract rather than a New Japan contract, then he would tone it down and wrestle a slightly more sensible style for the sake of his body. But I'm not sure that he would. I think he'd just go like that forever until he broke something and then be out.
Yeah.
So I think New Japan, certainly from the Gaijin point of view, tends to attract people who want to wrestle that style.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't think they would be able to on a, you know, 300-day-a-year schedule.
Yeah, I mean, Coach, because that was the rumor on Kota Ibushi was when he was doing the NXT house show schedules during the Cruiserweight Classic. He was wrestling like he normally does, doing DDT in New Japan.
Yeah.
You know, and he did that for 2 months and did it on 5 days a week and was fine. But that would not happen long term. He would not be fine if he tried to do it on a WWE schedule.
Mm.
And also, the road agents would just shut him down for doing it, because they're like, you know, why are you doing this?
Our
investment in you is too high.
It's the guys like Sabre Jr. that blow my mind, because he seems to be on every single show I go to. At the same time, he's wrestling for New Japan pretty much all the time.
Yeah,
and I know he wasn't on these cards, but
he's equally on most tours. He has the exact kind of style that you want to survive in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yes, he absolutely does. That's very true. Ospreay, not so much.
Yeah, if Daniel Bryan wrestled like Zack Sabre Jr. does, and he is more than capable of doing so, Daniel Bryan would not have any health issues.
I mean, he did for a period of his career, to be honest with you. A lot of those matches against a very, very young and slightly more haircutted Zack Sabre Jr. How long have we been going? That's the first mention of anybody's haircut. I just
49 minutes.
That's got to be a record, surely.
Yeah, I managed to even sneak one in. What was coming on last week on the Super J Cup? I was looking at Ghetto's hair, because he had a becoiffed rock and roll quiff.
Really?
Yeah.
Underneath that bandana.
Yeah.
Because he just looks like every bar manager in Manchester to me.
Back then, he went from the previous year. He had like the mohawk, but down. So he had shaved sides with a ponytail.
Ah, the Pidgeotto.
Yes, that's the one. And then he went from that to a bequiffed, dyed blonde job. Okay.
Right.
And then the next cut after that, he went to like a straight up punk, short back and sides, blonde haircut. And then it slowly got shorter and shorter and shorter until it's the number one you see today.
You see, that amazes me that you can have such a successful career while never sticking to one haircut.
I mean, no, see, that's it. He does not have a signature haircut.
One haircut per gimmick is the rule, isn't it?
No, this was, this was in the prior days of the world-class tag team, because Gedo and Jado were just known as the world's most dangerous tag team at the time. And then they became the world-class tag team when they came to New Japan in the early 2000s, by which time they'd settled on tights, boots, and bandanas as their thing. Prior to that, they were wearing these traditional kind of Japanese gi that you would see the bad guys wearing a Boom Martial Arts B movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, they wore that with some pretty outlandish hairstyles. You also got to bear in mind they were wrestling for Wing at some point, so they were trying to avoid getting set fire to. They were busy setting fire to Wing Kanemura in car parks in Osaka.
As opposed to with fireworks on top of Jimmy Abbott's car, which is the tradition these days.
Maybe that's why Gedo gets on so well with contribution.
I think it must be, yeah.
Yes. But that was the Best of Super Juniors, or specifically our kind of wayward take on the final matches.
Yeah.
It's us two. You can imagine it's going to be different. Next week, we'll probably have somebody completely different. Maybe Alex Watt next week, because he's keen to talk about Dominion.
Well, I think we're all keen to talk.
We
about
are.
Dominion.
I think this is going
to
be the one where we're going to have seven people on the show.
Well, we say this a lot, and then
it never happens.
And then something will happen, and people can't. I'm just trying. No, I'm not doing anything next week. So.
There you go. So, we probably will have Alex Watt, because he did say he's going to have a watching party tonight and cry.
Yes.
No matter what happens, he'll cry. That's pretty much what he does on a Saturday night. Is just cry.
It might. To be honest with you, having seen, because I've only watched the final match.
Yeah,
because I thought I can't stay off the internet for ever for the time it takes me to watch the 5 hours of this show.
Yeah.
So I'll watch the and to be honest with you, I mean the match is about as long as most shows are anyway. just that main event. So I have watched it, and I feel like we might need two shows. You know, one to do the rest
this
of the card,
match, and then the rest of this match. With.
Yeah, just an hour to gush about the final. So that's something to look forward to. Everyone,
there you go. You're going to see how we're going to divvy this up between the seven of us that are trying to do the show and whatever happens next week.
Yeah.
So that's you've got that to look forward to. Anything else wrestling news wise you'd like to talk about whilst we're here? Because we've got 10 minutes left, 8 minutes left.
I'm in because we are. What, 3 weeks away from Strong Style Evolved UK.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm quite fascinated about how that is going to go. Like I was saying, you've got a kind of split, almost house show circuit card, where you've got a lot of the guys in Daytona that weekend, a lot of guys coming over here. And they keep saying it's not a Rev Pro show, but there's going to be some Rev Pro guys on that card.
If you get... Maybe the KO. If a card has come in and you've got Ishii as Rev Pro champion, you're probably going to get the Chaos guys over here.
Yano's over.
Yeah, it would make more sense to send Chaos to the UK and Bullet Club to Daytona.
Well, Ibushi and LIJ are in Daytona, as far as I'm aware.
Right. So
I don't know about Bullet Club.
Bullet Club's big enough you could split some.
Yeah, well, I mean, were it me, that's what I would do with every faction.
Yeah.
I'd have some guys from each one at each end, but... I'm assuming we're going to get, there'll be like a Josh Bowden on the show probably.
Yeah.
Rev Pro, God bless him, have a slightly diminished roster now.
Yes. WWE, for those of you who don't know, WWE signed wrestlers or intention to signed wrestlers are no longer available to Rev Pro.
Yeah. I mean, we don't talk a lot about wrestling politics, especially not about British wrestling politics on this
Brexit
show.
Brexit wrestling politics.
Brexit wrestling politics, exactly. apart from, you know, the odd Zack Sabre Jr., Zack Labour Jr.
Zack Labour Jr.
Comment on Japanese language television that makes us laugh. I'm all for the WWE UK thing, and any extra exposure that it gets to these guys. I was all for it until I heard about these tryout contracts that they're handing out to people. Fair enough, that leads to these guys getting a contract, even if it's just a UK contract. Because from what I've heard about these UK contracts,
They're pretty sweet.
It's a pretty good deal. It's a downside guarantee that allows you to work as a wrestler full time, which, you know, for a lot of the British guys, that's what they want. That's their goal. So that's all fine. But this idea that you sign a contract that I don't know how much money or if any money, if it's any money at all. I'm assuming there must be some money attached to it, but basically all you're promised is that you're going to get a tryout every time they come to the UK. But they dictate where you're allowed to work in the meantime. That seems totally crazy to me.
It does to an extent, but equally, a few years ago when we was looking at King of Trios in 2014, the guys who went from Britain to King of Trios that year were Pete Dunne and
Mark Andrews
and No Fun Dunne, and all of them have had rocket launcher careers since.
Yeah,
not so much No Fun Dunne, but certainly he's one of the biggest draws on the UK indie scene.
Yeah,
and that wasn't his fault; he was injured, so he had a long injury laying off, and they were absolutely pilloried for signing deals that were costing them money because they had to pay for their own airfare to get there.
Yeah, they were they were pilloried for paying their own way. I don't feel like this is the same though.
Fair enough.
Because that's taking a chance on yourself, on your own merits.
Yeah.
This is almost the opposite of that. This is almost saying, I don't think I can make it on my own, so I'm going to cozy up to WWE even though they're going to dictate certain things to me.
That is an interesting way of taking on it.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but equally it's opportunities for people.
Oh no, absolutely. And I don't, you know, I've said this many a year in all of my walks of life. If I ever got the chance to sell out, I would be like a shot.
Yeah, as you know, he's been doing that for 20 years.
Yeah, exactly. I'm perfectly willing to take the easy money. but it just seems a little bit shady, this to me.
Yeah.
The UK contracts are one thing. That seems great, and it's worked out well for pretty much everybody who's signed up for it. Obviously, the ITV thing coming up is going to be great for a load of guys.
Yeah.
But then there are the forgotten guys who it hasn't really affected their career particularly. I mean, there's guys who were on the WWE UK tournament the first time around who haven't. I mean, maybe their money's gone up. Maybe they can ask for a bit more.
They'll probably get more bookings rather than the money going up, I would think.
Possibly so. But, you know.
I've seen on WWE TV does shift your bookings.
Yeah. But, I mean, I can't say that I've seen much. Any more of, say, your Roy Johnsons or your Sam Gradwells or your Muscle Cats.
Yeah, true.
Particularly. Maybe that's just the circles that I move in. Maybe they are getting more bookings and it's just shows that I don't go to.
It is difficult as well because it's like the British wrestling industry is so layered, more so than any other country.
Yeah.
In the sense of you have your Rev Pros and your Progresses and Riptide and whoever, the upper echelon of British wrestling, ICW and NGW, but below that is an entire
smorgasbord
of professional wrestling organizations that never leave their hometown, and they're quite happy to run their show on a Friday night in the town hall, and there's nothing wrong with that, and that means that there's loads of work about, and that's where people actually get good.
Well, I mean, this is the true benefit of these WWE shows, that even if WWE come in and take a massive chunk of the top talent from the British scene and say, you're not allowed to work here, you're not allowed to work there, you're not allowed to work there.
That
leaves spaces for guys to come up into. And there's so much talent on the British scene right now that there's going to be no worries at all.
It's the same thing with Io Shirai signing to WWE, to be honest with you, which she signed recently. Everyone's going, oh, what's Stardom going to do? Stardom will be fine.
Yeah.
They've got a bunch of 15-year-old girls who wrestle better than anyone on the WWE roster anyway.
Exactly. And now they have the opportunity to move up the card.
Yeah. You know, and Kagetsu won the World of Stardom Championship this morning from Tony Storm.
Yep.
Unsurprisingly, another move related to WWE wrestling, which we'll not talk about there because it's basically what we're talking about. So Kagetsu, who has been an outstanding wrestler for the last decade and a protege of Meiko Satomura, who didn't really get to shine until she left Sendai Girls and became her own woman.
Stardom.
Sorry. Yeah, no, she left Sendai Girls.
Oh.
She was a Sendai Girls regular. She was the number two draw to Meiko Satomura.
Oh, I thought you meant when Meiko Satomura left Sendai Girls. I was like, what?
That's not going to happen.
No.
but yeah, so Kagetsu had a massive feud. To be honest, her send-off from Sendai Girls was about as good as it gets. She had a massive feud where she pinned Meiko Satomura and Aja Khan.
Wow.
In 3 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, that's a push.
That's a push.
Yeah.
That is so yeah. So and she with Chigusa Nagayo in her corner.
Right.
I'll tell you the story one day. But if you look up Sendai Generation Battle on YouTube, you'll find it somewhere or on Daily Motion. You will see the most ridiculous 10-a-side winner stays on tag match ever. And it's absolutely glorious. And I strongly recommend it. And you should go it. It starts off with a Roha versus Dump Matsumoto, and she does not know what hit her. Anyway, but we're getting away from the point.
Yes.
Well, my point was Io Shirai leaving for WWE does no harm to Stardom whatsoever because there's a big enough pool of talent within Stardom, even within the wider Joshi scene. If they need to pull somebody in from somewhere else to have some star quality, that's doable as well. So it's not really a problem.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, as it's structured at the moment, it'll create opportunities for other guys, and the guys who go off to WWE, they'll get more exposure, and it'll be great for them. I just wonder if this is the start of... Because, I mean, we all know WWE's history in this sort of field.
Yes.
And that's the only thing that worries me.
Probably.
And yeah, I'd be wary of embracing the way they're doing things.
Too much.
Yeah, wholeheartedly. But yeah. I'd be a little bit cautious, personally, if it were me. But I'd also take the money.
You are a massive sellout.
Yeah. So, yeah. So that's that whole the tryout thing worries me. And again, we don't know the whole details. It's just what's being reported. So maybe it's not quite as bad as it sounds on the face of it. But like I say, this is as it stands now. It's only going to create more opportunities, and it'll be great to see some of the up and comers, or even some of the veterans who've been knocking around the British scene for ages and have not quite got their day in the sun, like your Joey Hayes's. You know, it'd be great to see them getting a bit more exposure, which I'm hoping they will.
And a nice move, Johnny Saint as commissioner of the tournament.
Yeah, that's quite...
Or general manager, I should say.
Yes, GM, yeah.
Because obviously we can't have a wrestling show without some form of authority figure on the show.
No.
That would be, like, you know, wrong.
Yeah, but it's nice that it's basically, you know, wrestling's granddad.
Yes. Yeah. who's a far better wrestler than...
Yeah.
At the age of 75 than... Most shows you go see.
But it's my hope now that the WWE UK brand will be almost like the dad's army of wrestling. You know, that would be nice.
Anyway, that wraps things up for the Troopany show for this week. I've been James Troopany. You can find me at Sheriff Lone Star on Twitter, and you can find the show at Troopany Show on Twitter. I'd like to thank my guest for today, Mr. Simon Corporate Chill Heath.
Corporate Sigh.
And you can find him at Butlin's Club on Twitter.
You can.
Do you still want followers, or are you...
I don't care.
You don't care?
No.
You've moved on from not wanting them to not caring about it.
Yeah, it's like I'm going with the Naito character arc.
Okay, I see.
So
this time next year, you'll be really desperate for people to like you.
Yeah, but pretending I'm not. But
pretending you're not, and then just get betrayed by them.
Can you be betrayed by people on Twitter?
I believe you can.
Okay.
It's happened to
well, that's
me
something to look
times.
Forward to then.
Yeah. Find him at Butlin's Club. You can find the show at Troopany Show. Oh, sorry, at The Troopany Show on Facebook and on Patreon, where you can help keep The Troopany Show free forever for everyone. Thank you for listening this week. Next week, we should be back with Dominion in possibly 4 or 5 parts with subsections and all sorts of chapters with an appendix. It's going to be awesome.
But then we said that about Super Juniors, and this was all you got.
That's life. Take care. We'll see you next week. Bye.